This is Katie and Kay's local and regional news. I'm Marilyn Gleason. During one of the busiest weeks of the season, the ski slopes in Telluride are empty. The Telluride Ski Resort's owner announced last week it would close the slopes while the Ski Patrollers Union began a strike over the weekend. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KOTO's Julia Caulfield reports.
The Telluride Ski Resort has reopened, with very limited terrain after being closed for over a week. The ski company closed the resort on December 27th. Telski officials said they made the decision to close after the Telluride Ski Patrol Union voted to go on strike. Ski Patrol and Telski have been in contract negotiations since June of 2025. While the mountain is technically reopened, there aren't many runs. On a snowy Monday morning, Lift 1 was spinning with only the Meadows Carpet and Vista Carpet open. And situated just off the slopes, around 30 ski patrollers were on the picket line for another day on strike.
This is day 10, sadly.
That's Jessica Blunt, a 20-year ski patroller at the Telluride Ski Resort.
I feel really, really torn about it. I didn't think it'd go this far. I didn't think it'd drag out this long. It's never what we wanted, but our jobs are just as important as everyone else's. We've heard the word entitled thrown around a bunch, which makes me feel really bad because we don't feel like we're any more important than anyone else, but we are just as important. We have an important job, turns out. The ski area can't run without us. We're not asking for anything unreasonable.
On Saturday, Telski sent out a message to the community saying they've had continued conversations with Ski Patrol to bridge the gap between the two sides. The ski company offered a new proposal which would increase the base rate for station leads, add a complexity pay bonus of $1.50 for all hours worked, paid out mid-season and at the end of the season, provide a three-year contract, and provide cost of living pay increases in years 2 and 3. But Catherine Devlin, vice president of the Telluride Ski Patrol Union and patroller at the Telluride Ski Resort for 6 years, says the offer doesn't speak to the union's needs. She specifically notes the pay bonus.
We really need the base structure to be addressed rather than a bonus structure. When you're applying for a mortgage, you can't tell your loaner, hey, I'm going to be getting a bonus at the end of this year. So it's just kind of, it's another Band-Aid on the problem. It's not really fixing it.
She says the union countered with another offer to Telski on Sunday.
We have lowered the price of the proposal again. So that delta is getting smaller and smaller, the difference between our proposal and theirs. So we're getting closer and closer. Yeah, it's good news.
Emil Sante, ski patroller at Telski for 30 years, says they're ready to get back to work as soon as they can come to a decision.
If we got a deal today, we'd be in the locker room first thing in the morning and coming up here doing our job.
In the meantime, Sante says people should get out and ski.
Just wish people a fun day on the ski slopes. If they come over, we've had lots of people come to us and apologize for skiing today. And we were like, no, please, we want you to ski. We want you to have fun.
But the limited terrain doesn't work for everyone. Felipe Fernandez is with a group of around 20 from Guatemala. He says if more terrain doesn't open by tomorrow, they'll be canceling the rest of their trip and going home.
And obviously, because of our bad experience, we will never come back here again. It's like a lose-lose situation because everybody is losing. The visitors, the restaurants, the hotels, everybody's losing, and it's the mountain is empty. Yeah.
The ski resort and patrol union met on Saturday and Sunday for contract negotiations and planned to meet for more talks last night. The resort says it's working to get as much terrain open as quickly as possible. That report was shared with us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio. In September, Colorado Parks and Wildlife released a plan to support biodiversity and guide the conservation of the state's most vulnerable species and habitats. The 2025 State Wildlife Action Plan, also known as SWAP, has been widely praised for its scope. It's also drawn criticism, particularly around the state's approach to wolf reintroduction. Dr. Richard Reading is chair of the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission, a citizen board appointed by the governor that sets regulations and policies for the state's parks and wildlife programs. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KGNU's Susan Moran spoke to Reading to find out more about the State Wildlife Action Plan and what it could mean for the future of conservation in Colorado.
I think what's really valuable about the swaps is they call out the species of greatest conservation need and the species of greatest information need. And by that, I mean species we don't know enough about to determine whether or not they need a lot of conservation activities or not. And so it basically helps the state understand where they should put their resources by saying, okay, here's the species that is in trouble. If we don't do something about it soon, it'll be listed on the U.S. Endangered Species Act, something we all want to see not happen because we want to have thriving populations of all of our wildlife out there. So what can we do to prevent that species from declining to the point that it requires listing under the state or and federal Threatened and Endangered Species Acts?
Interesting. So big role in its guidance, but it also has no teeth, effectively no authority. Is that problematic or kind of inevitable?
I think it's a little bit problematic, but it is true that there are no teeth involved. So there are no kind of downsides to the state if it doesn't follow through with some of the management activities that they propose in the plan. However, like I said, I think that the overriding kind of the thing that drives the state the most is to prevent the listing of species on the U.S. federal, state, and state Threatened and Endangered Species Acts. But it's true. I would like to see the action plan have a little more teeth, as it were, and maybe induce the state to do more for some of the species that are less known but more in trouble.
Interesting. And it seems that aim itself in preventing the listing under the Endangered Species Acts of species, like, on the one hand, great, that can mean, and ideally would mean, right, that the populations are healthy enough. But it can also mean, by not listing, and this has been a huge issue with some of the species, there's no really fixed federal protection.
Yeah, some of these species are obviously political hot buttons, and you know, you mentioned wolves at the top of the broadcast, and of course there's a effort right now at the federal level to delist wolves and not allow the relisting of those wolves. That's a politically motivated and political action that's not based in biology, and that would be a bad thing, in my opinion, if we went down the slippery slope of letting the politicians decide which species were threatened and endangered, rather than letting, as this Endangered Species Act calls for, letting the biology dictate what species get listed as threatened or endangered.
So, since you mentioned wolves, and that seems like the hottest of the hot button issues right now, what kind of score would you give the Wildlife Action Plan and actual efforts to successfully reintroduce them?
Yeah, the swap doesn't do as much as the state's wolf recovery plan, which we adopted as a commission a few years ago unanimously. And that plan calls for a lot of things that I think people gloss over, for example, we provide some of the most generous compensation for livestock producers if they have losses due to wolf depredations. That compensation includes not only the cost of the animal itself, but if they engage in, especially if they engage in, but not just if they engage in non-lethal control efforts or mitigation efforts, I should say, then they can get money for weight losses of animals, decreased birthing rates of animals that they believe is due to the presence of those wolves and that wolf depredation. So they can get quite a bit of money from the state, which hopefully helps keep them in business from their perspective. And that's a great kind of initiative that we passed, again, unanimously as an organization. It hasn't, however, reduced the conflict that we've seen with respect to wolf restoration in the state. And, of course, the ag producers want to see the program paused. The program might get paused anyway if we can't find wolves this year to put on the ground from other states.
And in fact, there's been quite an attrition, right? Over 30% of the reintroduced wolves have already died.
Yeah, you know, whenever you reintroduce animals, you have a relatively high rate of loss of those animals.
So is that much higher than expected, though? I mean, biologically speaking?
It's not. So I think a lot of people make a lot of hay off it, but I've spent a lot of my life working on reintroductions of endangered species to try to recover these populations. And losses can be much, much higher. If you look at black-footed ferrets, for example, the losses are 80 to 90% of the animals that are reintroduced are lost. These animals have a tough time trying to make it in a new habitat in an area they're not used to. In the case of Colorado, if they go across the border, which some have, they could get controlled by the state wildlife agency there, which has happened, where there are very little controls in Wyoming, for example, to protect wolves. And so because these wolves obviously don't respect state boundaries, the wolves that do wander into Wyoming can be killed, and that has happened.
Yeah, and I know some of the critics, including like the Garfield County Commissioner, Perry Will, have called this Prop 114 that passed a few years ago in support of the reintroduction an East Slope directed, West Slope affected bill full of promises broken. I mean, it does seem like, yes, there's popular support, but to some degree, ranchers are complaining not that there's not enough compensation overall, but they have to prove. They can't just think that the wolf caused it. They have to prove it. Like, is that valid criticism? And
I don't think it's valid. I think, you know, it could be misused if it's not proven that wolves did the depredation. There are other carnivores out on the landscape, mountain lions, for example, bears as another example, that also cause depredations. And we've seen in many cases, even coyotes can cause depredations, especially of calves. And we've seen in some cases that these animals, the preponderance of evidence suggests that these animals were the ones responsible, not the wolves themselves.
KGNU's Susan Moran was speaking with Dr. Richard Reading, the chair of the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission. That report was shared with us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio. This is KDNK News.